listening to a program produced in 2010 as part of Aloud, a series of dynamic lectures, readings, performances, and discussions that take place in the Mark Taper Auditorium at the historic downtown Central Library in the heart of Los Angeles. These programs are presented by the Library Foundation of Los Angeles, which supports the Los Angeles Public Library. To learn more about Aloud, please go to our website, www.aloudla.org. Our panel of experts tonight is going to present and analyze the urban agricultural programs which have emerged in Los Angeles, with a focus on key topics such as policies, challenges, and trends, and the programs currently in place. Our panel includes Mud Barron from the LAUSD School Garden Program, Glenn Dake from the Community Garden Council, Paula Daniels, the Food Policy Task Force, and Robert Gottlieb from the Center for Food and Justice. And our moderator, Mia Lear, will be telling you more about the panel. Mia, of course, is the internationally acclaimed landscape planner and president of Mia Lear and Associates. She's conducted extensive research on urban agriculture, and her Farm on Wheels program was the winning design for the Redesign Your Farmer's Market contest, which invited entrants to articulate and render their vision for the next generation of farmers' markets and how they will serve the community. After our panel presents their work, we will open to you for questions. We'll have two microphones circulating the audience. Mia will call on people, and we ask that you wait until the microphones come to you, as we do record for podcast. You'll be able to listen to this many times and tell your friends about it, too. So please welcome Mia Lear and our distinguished panel. Thank you.
Thank you, Louise, and the Library Foundation of Los Angeles for allowing us to participate. And I mean that, allowing us to participate, because it did feel like we had to step up to the challenge of the wonderful presentations that always take place here in the Aloud series. And the wonderful sponsors that make this series possible, including the Annenberg Foundation and City National Bank, KPMG, Wallace Foundation, and KPCC, as well as the Ralph M. Parsons Foundation. We have brought together this wonderful group of panelists who will engage in this important conversation about food. And there is a tremendous amount of work that's going on in terms of health and food issues that needs to be recognized and celebrated, and the panel here is certainly a group that demonstrates that. In Southern California, including the LA City and the county, there's tons, at least 29 programs that I could count and organizations that are working on these issues, including the Hunger Action LA surplus and LA, the leadership agenda to support policies related to nutrition, and the healthy beverage solution that prohibits sale of soda in vending machines at the students in schools, which Robert and others have been involved with, and many, many obesity and good food programs that exist across the city that many of you probably in the audience are also involved in. In 2009, the mayor created the LA Food Policy Task Force, and the mission is for LA, which is a world city with a feast of food riches, sitting in an amazing Mediterranean climate, with incredible resources and a varied geography, with a population that's so enterprising and wonderful and really loves food, to find a way to sort of really move forward the notion of food and food equity and justice in our region. So we know that water and water issues in Southern California, but we are also in many ways the vegetable and fruit basket, nut basket for the country. We produce at least 50% of the fresh foods and vegetables and nuts. And unfortunately, one of the things we're all living with right now is that we only keep about 2% in our city. And so one of the issues is, of course, how to recalibrate and rebalance the sort of distribution of food. And that sort of, we're all living sort of the results of that sort of distribution sort of balance that exists right now. And just to establish some sort of common language, and some of this I actually pulled from some of the amazing work that the Urban Rural Roundtable has been working on, and one is, what is a food shed? It's actually a new term. We all knew watersheds, and now we've got food sheds. Thank God we have airsheds too, all of which we have to worry about. And a food shed is the area of land and sea within a region from which food is produced in order to deliver nutrition to a population base. A local or regional food system includes all the inputs, outputs, and processes involved in feeding the population within a food shed, and the food shed concept does not obviate the goal or need to export or import food outside of a region. Most of us who have looked at food and food issues, we're probably looking at a food shed of about 200 miles from the heart of the area where we are sitting right now. And this is the pink areas are the areas that the urban built up land, with the southernmost area being San Diego. We have, you know, a really rich and incredible weather. I mean, the fact that we do have this imbalance and that we have, you know, basically people who go hungry is kind of stunning, given that we have this such an amazing climate in California, and we're able to grow food 365 days out of the year. In some of the work that our firm has been working on, we've been working with the Housing Authority on the Jordan Downs Project in South Central Los Angeles. And as we worked with the community, we realized that the idea of growing their own food became a very appealing a sort of idea, and that it really galvanized the community. And we were able to sort of propose some ideas and strategies to integrate sustainability and reimagining sort of a new identity for the place. And these are some of the new typologies, like, can the roofs have some gardens that each of these buildings could actually take advantage of? And could the streets actually grow orange trees, could be harvested as a community? And can the courtyards in these buildings also have productive gardens? And as Louise mentioned, I did a competition for the Farm on Wheels, and it was about recalibrating or reconceiving the farmers markets. And in our office, we never take, you know, one of these briefs without trying to think about what the issues really are. And one of the conclusions we came to, of course, was that equal access is a big issue, and that price and fair price is a big issue, and that we want to lead a much healthier life. And so the notion of hubs across the city where food could come from the farms and then get sort of put into refrigeration storage units so the farmers could actually go back and continue farming, as opposed to going to what they now have, which is about 120 and growing onto about 140 farmers markets across the city. And then that there would be a group of people, part of a cooperative, who would actually start taking food to different communities, fresh fruit trucks. And we all know what's happened with food trucks these days. But anyway, they would go out, and each community would have this one person they would get to know. And I didn't grow up in LA, but as I understand it, even in the 1960s, the library had a wonderful set of moving libraries that actually went to the different communities. And for those who weren't able-bodied or who were homebound, or you know, the books would come to them. And so the notion of these hubs, north, south, and east of the city, that then would allow for people to actually get fresh food and vegetables at home and really have access, and that each of these delivery trucks would actually be very focused on the kind of cultural sort of community that they were actually delivering food to, so that they would be related to that particular neighborhood. And another term that the LA Food Policy Task Force came up with, which is wonderful, is good food. So what is good food? Good food is food that is defined as healthy, affordable, fairly, sustainably and regionally produced, and accessible to all. These fellows who are very active in the task force will talk more about that. And I'm going to briefly introduce each of the panelists, and then we're going to open it up to, we're going to have two or three rounds of questions that each of them are going to answer, and then open it up to the audience. So food justice, food security, and empowerment. And Robert Gottlieb, and I was asking him where did he come from? How does he label his profession? And of course, he's a professor at Occidental College, but he was a journalist and an activist. He has really inspired thousands and thousands of students and activists to become involved in the environmental justice movement. And I would say that he really set forward this sort of ambition that people had about food and food policy across that has sort of garnered a lot of energy in California and across the country. And I'm sure that his institute and many other people have been part of it, but he's an inspiring man who has written several books, 12 of them. Among them, Reinventing Los Angeles, Environmentalism Unbound, Exploring New Pathways for Change, The Next Los Angeles, and a book that's to be published by MIT Press in October called Food Justice. Next in our group here is Mud Barron. And Mud is the Green Policy Director for LA Unified School District and is with the office of Marguerite Lamont, and is very passionate about teaching and sharing and allowing students to really develop a tremendous amount of pride for the work that they do, and inspires them. And you will hear from him about the wonderful work he is doing. And there's 900 schools and fewer programs, but if he has his ways, he'll end up with 900 programs. Glenn Dake, my friend and neighbor, and someone with whom I've worked for many years in all different ways, including conspiring as an activist in landscape-related issues around the city, serves as a secretary for the LA Garden Council and is board president of the LA Neighborhood Land Trust and a member of the LA Food Policy Task Force. And so he's also very engaged in, as I said, open space and open space issues in underserved neighborhoods, along with the Neighborhood Land Trust. And Paula Daniels, Paula was also trying to figure out what her profession really is. She's definitely trained as a lawyer, but doesn't really practice as a lawyer, but he's a wonderful public works commissioner. The Public Works Commission is the only commission in the city of Los Angeles that actually is a full-time appointment, and it has under its sort of belt a really important set of responsibilities, including all the public works projects across the city, and the Bureau of Engineering is one of the departments that they work with. And She has been involved in water and water issues and has been on the California Coastal Commission and worked with on the California Bay Delta Authority and was one of the early sort of supporters of the Heal the Bay nonprofit and has been an inspiration to many of us who've been involved in issues related to water and the environment over the years. So this was the slides about MUD, about how to go from a school that's all asphalt, and many of us have those in our neighborhoods, to a growing school. And the work that he's been doing as a green policy director, and some of it just happens to inspire people by distributing seedlings so people can go back home or to their schools to actually relate to the whole sort of growing of the fruits and vegetables that they will eventually eat. And in terms of building community, the LA Community Gardens Foundation, and one of the things that council, I love this quote by Jonathan Gold, because of course, being a foodie that he is, he thinks that some of these gardens allow for some really interesting produce that otherwise you wouldn't be able to find in a conventional market. And there are 70 community garden clubs serving 3,900 families so far. And in terms of changing policy, and one of the things that Paula will talk about is the notion that we all obviously have to think about production, but we have to think about distribution and the transportation of the goods across the city and the region. She will talk, describe sort of what they've been doing in terms of dealing with the better access and stewardship and the regional food shed identity. And again, this is the food shed and how we have to think about food, that we can't just think necessarily about our neighborhood, but for those people working on policy and policy issues and trying to sort of work with the state agriculture board or at a federal level, which is something that I've been educated about a little bit through Robert and others, that we really have to start to be able to think regionally. And from our perspective, and of course, Glenn and I are designers and planners, and so we think about, well, how could Los Angeles go from 2% to 75% of fruits and vegetables produced locally? And I guess that's the challenge, and probably one of the things we know is that an acre of food can produce 60,000 pounds of produce annually, which supports 25 families, so that could take us far. So reinventing how we think about land use and land use issues. And, as an example, do we need all the golf courses in the city? Does Griffith Park really need 4 golf courses? Or, can we really turn a lot of the schools and have sort of larger school garden programs? And what about if communities decided to actually work on their front lawns or their backyards and start growing food in larger community groups and start figuring out ways of harvesting that food together and selling it or giving it back to the community, what they can't eat. And the other is how to actually use parking lots or underutilized lands that actually could potentially have value, at least in the interim and temporarily, so that they can contribute to sort of this period of time when food would get recalibrated across the city. So is LA a growing city, meaning can we really change the way we think about how food is grown in our city, and can we look at the schools, community gardens, alleys, warehouses, and all these underutilized lands and actually contribute to a grander vision? And so what are some of the issues? Hunger, obesity, equity, the quantity and the quality of the food that is produced. Distribution, right now it's grocery stores, farmers markets, convenience stores, in community-supported agriculture? Is there another system? Issues of scale, backyards, community gardens, urban farms, and edible landscapes. And systemic thinking, how do we deal with zoning, planning issues, infrastructure, and the community strategies and regional thinking. So with that, I would like to now open it up. I'd like to go back to that last slide and leave it up if, I don't know what happened, but. For the conversation. So the first sort of question I'd like you all to sort of pose and deal with is what are you working on right now that sort of, we know you're working on the task force, and is there something unusual about the work that you're doing right now within the task force that, you would like to bring to light?
Let me start by using my governing metaphor, which is food justice, and translate that in terms of what Mia laid out by thinking it in the context of how do you create the possibility of getting healthy, fresh, local, affordable food for everyone, which is a major charge of the task force. It's a major charge of our Urban Environmental Policy Institute. It gets articulated in terms of thinking about policy changes at the neighborhood scale, regionally, and globally, as well as through federal policy and federal changes at the national scale. And it gets... one of the things that we do in terms of our institute is think about how you first can make programs happen that give people a sense of the possibility of that opportunity for changing the paradigm, getting healthy, fresh, local food to different places where there isn't that access. So one place where we've been doing it for a long time is in schools. And we have a program called Farm to School. And we've expanded it into other arenas like preschools. So we have programs like Farm to Preschool. And we think about it also in relation to the constituencies in the communities where that food is not available. So we have a program that talks about how do you actually get farm fresh food to people like women, infant, and children, WIC recipients. So we have a Farm to WIC program. And what's striking about the programs is despite all the barriers that you could identify, there is those kinds of possibilities. But you can't do it just with good programs. You've got to actually change the policy infrastructure, and you've got to change the culture around it. So one of the groups that we've established is called the Healthy School Food Coalition. And it's not only a question of can you get healthy, fresh food into the school cafeterias, but what is the overall school food environment where you have only 20 minutes for lunch, and if kids aren't able to access breakfast and they go through a day without having any food? And what about the junk food that permeates the surrounding environment? How do you transform not just the school food environment, but the communities in which those schools are embedded? And finally, what kinds of new initiatives are out there that involve program, policy, and organizing that can come together? And one example I'll leave you with is a program that is now been pulled together. It's in its planning stage. And it's an extension of the AmeriCorps program, and it's called Food Corps. And it will be creating opportunities for people to go out and work on those school gardens, to create farm-to-school programs and doing it through the AmeriCorps structure. So we need to do what I would call a long march through the institutions, like the places where you can bring about change. And I'll leave it at that because each of my fellow panel members are making that long march as well.
First of all, our test is off tonight, so for those of you that matters, my apologies. And for those of you who don't know what I'm talking about, you are my ag geek people. As Mia introduced me, Mud Barron, I'm the Green Policy Director at LA Unified, which is fancy talk for I try to build gardens all over 712 square miles of the largest geographical school district in the country. That doesn't mean much if you only just say it. What are you doing about it, and where's the inspiration for that come from? To the degree that years ago when I started off as a volunteer in the UC Master Gardener program, like Meredith and Laura and Bettina and some other folks that work with young adults like Miguel up there, 9 o'clock in the morning, take a group of 16-year-olds out into a 7-acre farm, North Hollywood High School, ask them which way east is, and there's no context. Why do we need to know that? Because you're human beings. Have kids in East LA at one of my favorite preschools check to see if the carrots are ready, pull them out, not ready, put them back in. Or not such a happy story. One of our best ever TAs, the teacher who's at North Hollywood High School, Rose, it's her program, she's amazing. She adopts these kids and she becomes a surrogate parent for them. One of them, Emily, was responsible for taking care of the rabbits and the chickens and the animals, and it's all about responsibility. So I was charged with looking over Emily's shoulder to make sure she was doing her job. And on Sunday, I noticed she hadn't fed the rabbits water, nothing was done. And I called her up. I said, Emily, how come you didn't take care of the animals? And her response was, Mr. Mudd, I double fed them Saturday. Which, holding the laughter for the moment, what that meant was she told me her mother, who had substance abuse problems, would double feed her, and that she just thought that was okay to leave twice as much and that they would make it through on Monday. So a garden program is not necessarily just about the carrots, and it's not just about the food justice. It's profoundly, I think, you know, for the high school kids that affected me and inspired the work I do, it's really about them and their self-esteem and who they are as whole people, which is suddenly now the garden becomes a prop for really developing engaged, empathetic humans that we want to share this planet with. Why gardens are important, environmental empathy is one. Nutrition is obvious. If it's not, you know, if I have to say this, kids that grow broccoli, eat broccoli. We have a childhood obesity epidemic, especially around communities of color, which LA Unified has a 7% Anglo student population, so it is a majority-minority student population. My boss is the board member for a little bit of Hancock Park all the way over to Culver City, sweeping down over Baldwin Hills, the most south of South LA, Watts, West Adams, Crenshaw. And the amount of work that I have cut out for me in greenlining those programs, because I actually am a policy director who has to wrestle with a school district that just went through $20.4 billion of new construction, largest public works project in the history of the United States, without building a single garden. And to this day, asphalt is the norm. We have some of the most productive agricultural land that's possible. And the kids' opportunities to double feed the rabbits is drastically curtailed. So as we talk tonight, I want to engage you in the process of changing that. So, you know, Emily stops double feeding the rabbits.
Are we going to Glenn or me? We're going to go in order?
Please.
All right. Well, it's great to be here with, especially up here on this panel with so many of my friends and the people that I work with. And to see so many in the audience who we work with all the time, too. Mia didn't get a chance to say anything about herself, but she's an incredibly visionary landscape architect, and it almost doesn't really sum it up to say that she's a landscape architect because she really is a whole systems thinker and has come up with a lot of tremendous ideas that inspire the work of many people at City Hall and otherwise. Bob is the chair of our food policy task force and has such deep knowledge in that area that I couldn't even begin to talk at the level he can about it. But I'm happy to be part of the work, and I'll talk about it in a second. Mud Barron is a relentless advocate for school gardens. He shows up at the public work office with flowers on a Friday. Now, is that good marketing or what? The first time I met him, he said, "Hi, my name's Mud Barron. Would you like some flowers?" And it's it's an incredibly memorable image, and he comes with the kids from the school. So he's done a tremendous amount to advance that issue. And Glenn, again, you know, landscape architect isn't enough to say all that Glenn does with the community gardens, but I met him at City Hall when he was working with Council President Garcetti, and he's done, I pull Glenn into just about every meeting we can because he adds so much to that. And there's others in the audience here who work on so many issues around this. So I'm now at City Hall. I have only been there for 5 years. I came with the mayor in his administration. I was an attorney in private practice, as Mia said, and chair of the board of Heal the Bay, so I'd been working on water quality issues for a long time. And I wanted to work at City Hall because it seemed to me an opportunity to think about how we can start changing our systems there. So my initial goal was to work on water quality issues and stormwater pollution and how you deal with the biggest source of water problems to the ocean. And our ideas were to, and this was the Dorothy Green, if you all have heard of her, who founded Heal the Bay, was to change the way we manage land so that we are retaining water as opposed to letting it run off into the ocean. We make the land act like the watershed it used to be as much as possible. I was at a press conference today. I'm very sunburned because I was out in the sun today. We were celebrating the opening of a green streets where this whole neighborhood was redesigned so that the water would be retained through bioswales. It runs down an inlet into the bioswales. And why do I bring that up when we're talking about food? Because it's about making the connection with land in our urban landscape. One of the bureaus we oversee at the Public Works is the Bureau of Street Services, and there's 7,500 miles of streets. The amount of paving that I'm aware of is profound. And so I came here thinking, we got a lot of pavement. How do we change this? And a lot of the work that I've been doing is around that. Like, how do we change the way we look at the urban fabric? And we want to weave nature back into the urban fabric. So we're doing that in changing the way we design our streets and sidewalks to retain water. And the next, another step, is how do we integrate food back into the urban fabric the way Mud is doing with school gardens. There's a lot of ways we can work on food issues. Obviously, access comes in huge, elaborate distribution systems, but another way to do it is through urban agriculture, which I think Glenn will talk about more too. So making that connection, so that people connect back to what's real about our environment is a bigger hurdle than, you know, than we might realize. People often would say, "No, I think you all are here. You came to a panel," but there, as Mud was saying about people who don't understand quite how food is grown, you hear that about water too. I mean, you could ask a lot of people, "Where does water come from?" And they'll say, "The tap." They're not thinking about the Sierras. They're not thinking about Sacramento River. They're thinking it comes from the tap. So a lot of our work, all of our work here collectively, is to reconnect, to reassociate what's been disassociated. A friend of mine is advancing the term urban metabolism, Stephanie Pincel, Dr. Stephanie Pincel, who's somebody I admire greatly. And so it's thinking in whole systems way. So that's kind of what we're trying to do with the Food Policy Task Force. Now, I see the role of city government in this as being supportive, as enabling, as bringing together the work that's already happening out there. There's a tremendous amount of work already in place. So what can we do in government? And I see us as being able to catalyze, support, and to eventually operationalize. So with the creation of the Food Policy Task Force, what we wanted to do was bring together, obviously, a leader in this field is Bob Gottlieb. So he's the chair of the task force. We have Glenn on the task force. We have Miguel Luna on the task force, who's up in the audience. Mud has come to many of our meetings, as is Mia. So by listing these names, I'm telling you, there's lots of people out there who are doing this work. So we're trying to connect all those different pieces together. So in broad strokes, it's food security issues, so the hunger issues, access to food, and that would mean also, you know, food stamps and nutrition programs, food deserts. There are a lot of people doing a lot of good work in that area. Then there's also the issues of agriculture and distribution. the production of food, what's grown, where it's grown, and how it's distributed. So we want to get those people, and we've had a number of those people as part of our task force, people who are on the retail side. We have farmers, Alex Weiser of Weiser Family Farms, who you may know if you go to the Santa Monica or any of the farmers markets. He sells his potatoes out there. We also have Phil McGrath and so forth. So the idea is to bring the different ends of the food system together so we can talk about how to create a more robust regional food economy. So what I mean by that is the good food word has in it the term local. There are a number of small and mid-sized farmers in our region who produce a lot of good food, produce. And Mia put the slide up there for you. Where is a lot of that going? We want to find out more about where it's all going and how it's all being distributed. We'll be doing a food shed assessment where we'll take a deeper look at the consumption and distribution patterns. There's a lot of detail I could go into that, but we can talk about that later. But there is also a great vision for a different kind of distribution system that would support small and mid-sized farmers. And Vanessa Zeifen, who I wanted to raise her hand, because she's the one who's working on that. It's her project. She's working with Bob Gottlieb at the Urban, UEPI stands for what?
Urban Environmental Policy Institute
and Center for Food and Justice. And it's a very, very visionary idea that we're ready to support fully, which would, so I feel like she should talk about it and not me, but you can maybe ask her more questions about it later. So my elevator speech on it is it's an alternative distribution system to support small and mid-sized farmers so that there's a large distribution system in place already. Small and mid-sized farmers run the risk of not being able to participate in it because their food is not, it requires standardization basically to be in that large system. So this would aggregate and distribute the food in a way that helps support the small and mid-sized farmers. And I think others can talk about it better than I can, but it's a really important piece of what we're trying to move forward. And then on a more urban scale, too, one of the things that I'm supporting is the work of Alina Bakhte at the LA Neighborhood Land Trust and Travis Longcore of USC to strategize where we can place more community gardens. So we're using the city's, the Bureau of Engineering, which is one of the bureaus I oversee, their data, their maps and the information, and we're also getting other information. I've just been sending files over like crazy, so they can pull all this information together, and they're going to do an analysis of where community gardens are now, what open spaces might be available for more of them. They're focusing on low-income areas, so they're using the community development block grants for, maps to identify these areas in low- to moderate-income communities. They'll look also at where farmers markets are located and where there might be food deserts, so a need for food. And they'll be developing some online resources so that we can help develop more community gardens. There's lots of work like that on the ground that we're doing to create a more, I think, connected urban metabolic food system. And I think with that I'll stop because I could go on forever on the great programs we have in the city.
Yeah, it's really inspiring to be here because this work has been ongoing for a long time. We've got a long way to go. And it's also very interrelated, the work on getting the groundwater to function properly and getting our food to be healthful for us and have a community in which we can raise children are all very highly related things. For myself, I'm very motivated to participate with Alina Bakhte at the LA Neighborhood Land Trust, for example, because it's my personal belief that it will be bad and we will be a poorer people if we convert Ventura and Riverside and San Bernardino County into more suburbs, and the agricultural land that's there is suburbanized at the rate that it's continuing now. I instead contend that people who want to have a family and are looking for a place to live, maybe they're just barely making it, should have a good option in like Vermont Square down near USC or Watts. There's a lot of good streets in Watts. There's honorable places to live there. So what do we do to make that a possible choice? The other choice is to go buy a house out or, you know, rent a place out in San Bernardino and drive that whole way. Like the LA Neighborhood Land Trust's efforts are to make a little community garden, like the Vermont Square Community Garden, that is a very important amenity to people who work hard, both parents sometimes, you know, not a lot of extra, I can go to Magic Mountain money, to go have some simple childcare options to get out of the house. If you have your, if you are living with your children, your grandchildren, you know, the grandparents want to get out of the house. At our community garden in Watts at Stanford Avalon, a lot of the gardeners are there most of the day because they're in a house with a lot of people. And it's a good place for them to go be, to find their place in the world, and to be to contribute meaningfully with their own work. So I'm very moved by these little community gardens as a way to help people who don't have a lot of other options to shine, to find a way to contribute personally. And let's say we've set that stage. Here's this place where they can shine and contribute personally. What have they made? I get Savour magazine because I'm into food. You know, I'm okay cooking. And I open up, and Jonathan Gold has written this article that Mia talks about how the Stanford Avalon farmers are growing chipolin and papalo and epazote. You know, nobody told them to grow this stuff. They knew. And it was a wonderful flowering of just regular people given the space to be. And they have some awareness of their contribution to the health of the watershed and the reduction of the food miles traveled by their actions. They do it for themselves. They do it to make their experience richer. And the more of that little stuff we can do, we have to set up a framework where it's possible to do, you know, like Baba said, you can't like just do little programs. You have to change the policy. We'll be richer people.
So we've talked about, you know, big interventions or smaller sort of level projects, and we also talked about sort of larger policy programs that, you know, you're advocating for and working on. And I'll sort of want to know sort of what can we do to advance the issue? And politically, is it at a local level, at the city level, is it at a state level, or is it a national level? So what do you think one can do, and what are you doing, Bob, right now in terms of advocating for this movement?
You got to do it at all levels. And you have to do it both in terms of changing the environment around you, whether it's in terms of one's own family, one's own neighborhood, one's own school or community, but also because one needs to be part of a community of actors, of participants who do things like organize to make a change, whether it's the work that went on in 2002 of a number of students and parents and teachers who said, get the sodas out of LAUSD. And by that act, by that organizing, that really changed an incredible dynamic around the country. It wasn't the first place that where that happened, but it was part of a process. And the famous slogan, if you can do it in LAUSD, you can do it anywhere. right now, there's legislation that's being debated in Congress around the reauthorization of child nutrition. And there are many different aspects of that, and there are different campaigns that are going on that range from dealing with the fact that we now have 40 million people on food stamps in this country. unprecedented numbers. Well, one of the things that could also happen as part of that change is allowing and making viable the idea of getting healthy food through food stamps. Changing the school food environment. There are a number of things about the school lunch program that are coming up through child nutrition. And there are different campaigns on each of those different planks. So it's very traditional political organizing that's going on, but it's political organizing that's really part of changing the sense of the culture around food, the what I would call the discourse around food, how we talk about food, how we act about food, whether it's at the home, in the neighborhood, at the school, or globally.
So it will involve some difficult decisions in terms of importing and exporting, and it relates to some of our neighbors. And, you know, I mean, it's not just a national issue, isn't it? I mean, for those of us who are used to eating berries and strawberries and mango now all year round, it involves, you know, international sort of trade policy issues also.
You know, it's interesting, you know, Paula is talking about how she came to food
through water.
Yeah. We are part of a collaborative of groups who are involved in neighborhoods that are experiencing the problems of that global trade system, including food, because of the diesel trucks that come through the neighborhoods, or they live in the poor communities, and there are these enormous community health and environmental impacts that are occurring. And one of the things that happened recently when we had a conference a few years ago, and we're going to have another conference on this in October, was a session that Mark Valianatos from our institute led about food. And there was an immediate connection. We don't want that food coming in. Why can't we have food that's local? So here we're another way in which you think about that issue of global trade and the global movement of goods, which includes food. We're increasingly seeing that jump in the number of food products that come in to this country or that are exported out to other countries and change the food systems in other places. And people at that local scale, community scale, made that connection. And they are very actively thinking about food as part of their agenda as well. So there are ways in which you can make a connection between what you experience and the world around you and how food enters in. Food is both the occasion and the metaphor, the entry point in for thinking about changing a lot of different systems.
So, Mud?
Well,
politically,
LA Unified specifically spends 57 cents on the actual food portion of its school lunches. So I won't mince words by saying, you know, my school district and me, by extension, commits child abuse on a regular basis. But not getting into the conversation about school lunches, the forte in the center of my work is about creating those green spaces to enable the food dialogue amongst students to happen. That means, as the green policy director for one of the board members, and the only one, so I work with all the offices on the issue, policy alone doesn't cut it. You have to fund it. We're veterans of No Child Left Behind within the education sector, and unfunded mandates are just that. That said, the story that you hear constantly, the drumbeat about the school district being broke is quite true. I was talking to Jackie Goldberg yesterday. She was saying, you know, Virginia spends three times as much on her students. I'm tired of what the LA Times does to us. We need more money for the educational process. And that's true. On the instruction end, the budget needs to be more. On the facilities end, where there's amazing potential. Today I was elected to be on the board of a group called CHIPS. Many of you may know what LEAD is. CHIPS is Lead for Schools. And I didn't say I wanted to be on the board at first until the director told me, Mud, there's in Prop 1D $250,000 in green modernization funding for every school in the state of California. And it's just stuck in Sacramento, and we want you to help move it. That means in LA Unified, that's $225 million to create green open spaces. That's a significant step forward. That's potential, but that will only be directed to the schools to make those outdoor classrooms that facilitate the food conversation that we think is so important at this point in the dialogue, if there's pressure, not just on my boss, Ms. Lamont, who wants, as she puts it, she's a 70-year-old Catholic black lady from Louisiana, she wants all the babies to have broccoli. That's her thing. And I'll roll with that. I can do that. I can handle that. But it's, you know, it's board member Flores, it's board member Garcia, it's board member Martinez. Everyone's green. What does that mean? And for the partners in the room, like I saw Matthew from the Hollywood Farmers Market and Sela, awesome partner, really help schools with farm to school. My students at North Hollywood High School, those kids go to the farmers market in the fall and they go, no way, Mr. Mudder, is anyone ever going to buy a $35 bouquet? And I have to interpret to them, who are predominantly Latina and Latino, I go, look, there's crazy white folks, they're going to buy your $35 dollar bouquets. Anyone bought one of the bouquets before besides Mia? Yeah, so she just shakes me down. It's not buying, but, you know, we love her anyway. The actual funding dialogue, really stepping up and supporting the schools, is something that every one of you, every one of you can do. We have amazing partners, like I said, like Sela and the Hollywood Farmers Market. UEPI has done work over the years, somewhat distrustful at this point. Anyone who works with the school district, you know, you have to be not so bright like I am. But ultimately, it's about the babies and the broccoli. And concretely, this is really a weird reference point. And I'll leave it at this point. How many of you are signed up for Facebook? Facebook? Folks, right? Right? Pepsi Refresh Challenge of all the places I'm going to for funding. LA Unified with our media partner, which is Nicole Ritchie, yes, the Environmental Media Association, we're up for $250,000 grant, which would have a profound it's an amazing, for every dollar we get in non-attached funds for capital improvement, for every dollar we can multiply that times anywhere from 10 to 100. So I want you to all go home and sign up for the Pepsi Refresh Challenge, and I will bring that up in the next time I get to talk.
So how do we move it forward? And I agree with Bob, it has to happen on all levels. And it's pretty amazing how powerful a market choice can be in terms of driving change. So I have a feeling you all make those choices. You read about this panel, you saw the topic, you came here. So you probably make a lot of choices that have been making a huge difference in the food system already. When people started buying organic a long time ago, it started making that market for organic become more profitable for the farmer so that they could start doing it. Still not exactly where it could be, but it's better. So if you were to buy local, if you were to insist that your food is produced locally, or that you go to Whole Foods is already... How many of you shop at Whole Foods? I bet a lot of you do. Yeah, I knew it. This is a Michael Pollan reading audience, I think. Right, so if you go to Whole Foods and you start... I shop there, so I start making those choices. I start thinking about what local means, and I start making those choices, right? And the more you support somebody who's grown something regionally, the better, so that helps make that market better. But it radiates up through the federal level because the Farm Bill is a huge driver for change in terms of food policy and where that money's going, how much of that money's going to subsidize irrigated crops. So
do you want to... sort of clarify what you mean by the Farm Bill? It's up for...
The Farm Bill is up for reauthorization every 5 years, and the discussions are taking place on it right now. A lot of it is, and I don't know the exact numbers, but a lot of it goes to subsidizing five major crops, which are corn, rice. You all know about this, right? Corn, wheat.
Soy.
Okay, you tell me. Corn, soy, rice. Why am I
okay,
wheat?
But it gets renegotiated every five years.
Right,
there's
right.
negotiations about what the Farm Bill is going
right,
to be.
Okay. Right. And so there's a lot of opportunity to put more discussion around instead of the money, you know, a lot of the money going more toward water conservation practices on farms, supporting fresh food programs, all of that.
So.
Well, and I would add that what I learned when I was on the Urban-Rural Roundtable was that California farmers don't benefit from that kind of crop subsidy because we have
not
a diversified
much.
Farm. Yeah, not as much.
There are some subsidies for corn in the Central Valley.
Good.
Yeah. Not that it's good.
Not that it's good, but at least it's here. Bad things here. I think there's opportunity for change through government in the land use planning scheme of things. When we do community plan updates in the city of LA, there's not really a community garden land use, and there's not even a way where you can put on the plan, there's a community garden there. Because most community gardens are rented land, you know, there's only a couple that are owned for the purpose of community garden. And I think we should do better than that. It's a real use that people care about, and they're depending on it being there. And the city council, with the leadership of Councilmember Garcetti, just passed the Food and Flowers Freedom Act. Everybody loves the Food and Flowers Freedom Act. A good name is worth a lot. But it means that on my lot, I can grow what I care to, and as long as I follow the rules of the home occupation ordinance, which means I have no sign and I can't sell it on site, such as a landscape practice or a professional or a screenwriter writing out of their house would have to follow, I'm able to make money by selling that produce off-site. And you can go to the state of California and get a seller's permit for $64, I've been told, one of my neighbors told me, $63. So I think that kind of small land use change really could have be a achievable thing to do.
And for many of us who are on, you know, organizations like I am, like the Latino Urban Forum, getting involved sort of in politically to support some of the programs and also some of the elected officials that are supportive of this issue. I would imagine that in the next sets of elections, this is going to be something people are going to bring up, you know, their support for sort of healthy food options.
Yeah. Yeah.
We talked about politically what some of the issues are, but how can people participate in some of the ongoing programs that some of you are involved in, and how can we all communicate or know better? I mean, other than somewhat of a Herculean effort on the part of Andrea Martinez from my office to get us here today to share with at least 200 people what you got, great work that you guys are doing. You know, there are obviously those of us who followed your all's work, and there's some circles there. But, you know, there seems to be sort of a lack of information about the wonderful work that's happening, not only on your part, but many other people doing interesting work. And don't tell me just Twitter, because Twitter's not going to do it all. How can we communicate better, and how can people participate?
Mm-hmm. You want to go in order?
Yeah. I mean, several of us here are involved with the Food Policy Task Force, and one of the ideas that's circulating in terms of thinking about its next phase is how the task force's role can serve as a kind of conduit for people working on different issues to both enhance that work and also to come together. And there's discussions about creating, for example, something like a food summit that would be kind of convening and thinking about those mechanisms. It's difficult in a place like Southern California and LA to do that for a number of reasons. But there have been examples. We worked on a kind of a parallel thing around all the alternative transportation, all the alternative streets activity in a street summit. And it served a lot of that same purpose, that sense of we need to find the forums, the connections, and then the opportunities to work together. And so that's one illustration. It's not going to be the only one by any means, but it's one that I think is a real opportunity. And stay tuned.
To the media piece, I think that's what the question was. Mia and I and Environmental Media Association and the National Gardening Association, and we even signed Bob up, he didn't know it, at UEPI, with Good Magazine are hosting a school garden design competition, which is really a dialogue about best practices so that the threshold so that schools can do gardens, it's not so mysterious. We're actually going to be publishing maybe Good Magazine's first. How many of you are familiar with Good? Yes, for people who give a damn, that would be you. The threshold, especially in South LA, I don't have, and I don't know if any are here at the moment, my bougie school garden mom's there. I love my bougie school garden moms at Title I schools because they're unreasonable, they're surly, they're angry, and they don't take no, and they will hire a seismic engineer to find power lines to put a garden in. And I don't always have that at Marvin, 59th Street, some of those schools. So we're trying to lower the threshold by creating best practices. So a school garden, which has predictable things in it, soil, irrigation, plants, tools, sun, those things can be streamlined. And that's a very public social media, Facebook overlap conversation. And if I didn't mention this already, I've got a $250,000 challenge with Pepsi, B-U-J-A, Bouja 7D, you know, look up Environmental Media Association, because if you can get Nicole Richie and Rosario Dawson and Amy Smart and a bunch of folks from some werewolf movies things, I don't know what they're about, to go out and show up for a school garden, and Michelle Obama, let's not forget her, then everybody needs to engage in the conversation. And if I didn't mention this also, I don't have any problems that aren't solved by money. So I will name a garden and a chicken after you tonight.
Yeah, so, I think I didn't...
Chickens in your garden?
No, God, I can't grow anything. I have herbs in a windowsill, on my windowsill, and I'm really proud that they haven't died yet.
We have chickens at Occidental now.
You do?
They do. Facebook chickens.
I love eating food. I like the connection to it. It's pretty tremendous work, but I'm not home very much. So, but I want to mention, which I didn't mention before, is the work of the Food Policy Task Force, which was formed in September. And it's not the final version of what we hope to come out of this bringing together people and around food systems thinking. So the task force is thinking through what a structure could be, as Bob mentioned, and our report is due toward the end of this month. Alexa Delwich is the task force coordinator. She's up there in the back in the orange and is doing tremendous work on this. But the reason I say that is we're thinking about ways people can get involved. We're thinking about what the next structure would be. And one of the things that I am fully aware of is that we need to have something robust in place at City Hall, because right now food systems thinking is not connected up there. There's a lot of good people working on different aspects of food, but we don't have it working on a coordinated way. So we've done that with water and the urban runoff stuff that I've told you about. We have a Green Streets Committee that works across departments and bureaus to bring people together to think about those issues and help move them forward and to help create new ideas and to be a place where a lot of this work can be thought through well at City Hall. So that's something we're thinking about, is trying to create that. And I don't know whether or not that's going to be open to the public. That was the question, is how people can get involved. We have to think about what that structure might be. But a food summit is a really compelling idea. And it would bring together a lot of people around a lot of different disciplines and talk about these issues and hopefully have a lot of opportunity for people to participate that way. And I also want to mention a group called Roots of Change, which is a nonprofit group based in San Francisco. And they're doing work around the state around food systems thinking, around coordinating activities. They helped with our Urban Rural Roundtable. It's a good organization. It's one, if you don't know about, worth tapping into.
Yeah. I hear Paula say you're not such a good gardener, but maybe you could be my girlfriend.
What's that?
No.
Or you can use my space.
No, girlfriend. If you go to girlfriend.org, you'll see there's a way for people who have excess space on their lot to connect with people who are gardeners but don't have any lot. And you could put, it's like, a dating thing. You can find each other. So another thing,
okay.
That's personal, right? Yeah.
I'm your girlfriend.
Yeah, thank you, baby. Thanks. This is great. This is, we accomplished a lot. Another really neat thing that people can do is they can sign up for Food Forward. This is a gleaning group, and they are cool people. They organize a ton of volunteers to go out to urban fruit trees or rural fruit trees that are not going to get harvested otherwise, take the fruit and take it to a food bank. And, you know, that in itself is a good thing to do, but you also get to be with the other people. It's an enriching experience to do. You get to go to the orchard, for one. And then last I'd point out that I've gotten email from the South Central Farmers that their farm sella is June 12th at their farm out in the Central Valley. That's a Saturday. So, you know, go find the South Central Farmers and go out and enjoy the day on the farm.
Questions. Are there mics out in the audience? And obviously, you know, just to, you know, we have to be thinking about sort of a systemic thinking, and then we have to be thinking about smaller interventions, and we'd like to engage in questions now. Are we a series of villages in Los Angeles, or are we one big place? Yeah. That's a question.
Yeah.
So I just want to say thanks. This is fantastic. I work at the Naturalist Museum, and Mia is actually designing our 3.5-acre garden, and we're building a place where we can grow food there. And I wanted to bring up the fact that we recently had a farmers market in Expo Park, and it ran for about 4 months, and then it was shut down. And so I wanted to talk, Paula, you brought up the fact that in food deserts, you know, you're looking at places where they need farmers markets. How can we ensure that the farmers markets that get started can carry on and keep going and blossom?
Yeah, that's a good question. We are doing what we can to help support farmers markets in the city. Bureau of Street Services does the permitting for the farmers markets, and they looked at the pricing. We recently passed a special events ordinance in the city that wouldn't allow us to waive fees anymore. So what we did do for farmers markets is change the fees from weekly to annual, so it's much less. I think so we can at least try to support in the city by making sure the permit process is helpful to the farmers markets. It's not onerous, and we've been doing a lot of work to try to figure that out. And I'm meeting with some folks from the county hopefully soon to coordinate countywide. On this. I think support for farmers markets economically, though, comes from your market. So hopefully we can get people to buy from farmers markets. It's a really important, everybody here knows this, I'm sure, direct marketing approach that supports our local farmers. So how many people here shop at their farmers markets? You see? So, and then Joyce in the back from CLA. Talk to her because they know how to run farmers markets. And one of the things we're trying to do, too, actually, with farmers markets is help support the fresh food access so that you can use WIC and EBT, right, at the machines. And I think there's an authorization for more SNAP funds at farmers markets recently.
I think that part of it is, you know, help with also with marketing so people understand where the market is, when it's taking place, and it takes some time to get something like that going. So there's, you know, there's probably some of the more mature farmers markets needs to help some of the more, the younger farmers markets get going. So there might be
identify where
big
they
brother,
are.
Big sister situation or big brothers, young brother. Okay. Hi.
Hi. I was a little bit disappointed. I came here and I noticed that a number of us raised our hands when you asked if we grew fruit produce in our backyards. I've been growing fruit and vegetables for about 30 years before the term organic was important. I would like to know how to organize, or is there an organization for people like me who are backyard farmers? This year, for the first time, a neighborhood restaurant sent out the word that they would buy vegetables and fruit from us. They were then shut down because everyone snitched to the health department. That's when I found out about the $63 certification fee, which involves having an inspector come out to my house to look over what I have available in the way of produce. You talked about production of food and reduction of the miles of food traveled. I have produce, I have fruits, I want to distribute them, I want to give them to places, and I have not heard of any way of getting together backyard farmers like myself to get rid of, to distribute my fruits and vegetables.
Here, here.
One of the most interesting programs that's been developed is a number of community organizations affordable housing organizations that are operating in places like Boyle Heights and Highland Park are establishing new programs and trying to figure out how to overcome the barriers so that residents in affordable housing developments can grow their own food and create what would amount to an edible landscape movement, if you will, in communities where there aren't those opportunities, there aren't the backyards. And so we also need to think about ways in which this can happen so that the opportunities are available in all communities. And this is, I think, one of the more exciting changes that's taking place. Groups like East LA Community Corporation and Works, which operates out of the several places in the region in low-income communities.
Just real quick, direct answer, SOVA and MEN food banks in the Valley will take, if you want to get rid of, that's what you use the phrase, get rid of. And then there's a food bank that's operated out of Cienega Elementary School near Adams and La Brea.
Glenn?
And I'd just say stay mad and be disappointed. I think that it's wrong. Yeah, it should be able to be done. Food Forward.
Yeah.
Yes.
Gleaners. Yeah.
Good evening. We're the organizers of the Eco Community Dialogues in Pasadena. So we've had guest speakers every month for the entire past year. And one of our very first speakers was Jules Dervais, the original urban homesteader. He lives in Pasadena. His goal is to have 1 million organic freedom farmers, and his website is freedomfarmers.com or pathtofreedom.com, and they do seed saving exchange, and they're certainly there to, they were one of the first bloggers that ever went on the internet. And also, just as the grassroots thing, our group is grassroots. We're not government. We're just community volunteers, and we take environmental outreach programs into the neighborhood. So my question for the panel, is this flower and food law going to be Los Angeles countywide or just the city of LA? Okay, so is there a way you can expand it to Pasadena and the other cities?
No, but there's a way you can expand it to Pasadena.
Very good.
There's a man back there. Can you take the microphone back to... Sorry.
Hello there. Pardon my seat. I'm Reginald Fagan. There is several groups that handle market gardeners, and that tends to encompass backyard gardeners. I'm an instructor. I teach at Cal State Dominguez Urban Agriculture Introductory to Gardening. I also have an organization called the Timbuktu Resource Center, and we're based in Compton, Carson, Gardena, and the Watts area. So we focus on the inner city. And so I wanted to talk to you folks about trying to deal with certain stigmas that are still existing within, say, for example, the African-American community. And you can probably see there's very few here. There tends to be, like, I'm at a lot of the schools in some of your areas, Mud, and I'm also, like, Nixon Gardens. And I'm out every day. I'm, in fact, just got out of the garden. And, you know, a lot of the kids still have those perceptions about slavery and sharecropping, and that's backwards. And, I mean, I'll have my young kids out working sometime, and the other kids will walk by and say, lift that bell, tow that soil. And it's a perception. And so what we've been trying to do is utilize the various barbershops, beauty salons. I mean, I'm on the buses talking to the bus drivers and just try to alter the whole mindset in the inner cities, because unless you get people perceiving and thinking differently, the sustainability is it's not happening. I mean, like the lady said, you'll have a project 4 months, and you can't get that community outreach. And you're right, we don't have the bougie housewives, but we do have some everyday grassroots people. We do have the homeless. We do have a lot of folks that are disenchanted that need to be engaged. And
well,
so if you can talk about how we can engage.
In your cultural group, you yes. have one of the most amazing leaders who actually built a victory garden at the White House.
Oh, yes.
So hopefully you can, you know, have them sort of pay attention to some of the wonderful work that she has done on behalf of the community. And I think that in terms of the Latino immigrant community, you
yes.
know, when they arrive, probably many in the first generation come from farming areas and probably do not think that farming is something that's so, you know, not what they aspired to do when they came to America. And yet, at some point, whether it's because of the economy or because of there's something that draws them, when if they've grown up with, you know, farming and growing their own food, is something that they're passionate about. So there's no question we have to change the paradigm and allow for the great sort of examples that do exist to sort of shine.
Well, I'll say this, because out of all of my programs, 80% of my clientele are Latino. So, yeah, there's not a problem there. But, yes, Michelle Obama has done a large amount, but then you have to also flip that over and see the high amounts of unemployment and the other issues that are pressing, say, within the African-American community.
Yeah.
So that doesn't resonate as well in the African-American community. And so what we've been trying to do is tie it to jobs and try to look at creation of green jobs. We started doing training programs at Dominguez, where we've got almost 60 volunteers that have come through, and these are retired folks. And so we try to get our retired volunteers into the communities, and they're speaking at the various barbershops, beauty shops, whatever, and just trying to get the word where, you know, gardening is positive, it's therapeutic. So, yeah, you're right, it's a paradigm shift. And so we definitely would like any support in the, you know, community in helping us to address that issue. Thank you.
One, just throwing back to that, you know, one thing, I don't know if you've noticed, but, you know, from a 17-year-old's perspective, anyone over 23 is really old. So, I mean, really old. And, you know, one of my prouder grads that I worked with over the years, who I hired and hit the Summer Youth Employment Program and got him to, you know, go down to the City Hall and meet Jan Perry, and she taught him how to curse really well. You know, he's a CSUN business major.
One of the deputies is here.
That's, well, you know Jan then. So, you know, the thing is that, you know, the core of it, it's about self-esteem. And for those few kids that we've had at North Hollywood who are predominantly Latino and Latina, you know, they make $70 in an afternoon at the Hollywood Farmers Market. All that stigma about, you know, the out in the sun and the brown kids, or that goes away because, you know, they're one step closer to owning that pair of true religion jeans that they so desperately want. I don't know how that is culturally deeming in the greater perspective, but it's not about the greater perspective. It's about the kids, and the kids are the ones that get this intuitively. They get it. And, you know, on my end, just beyond cultures, I tell the kids to keep up with the old white guy. But
I'm sorry, but we have one more question.
I do some of my best conspiring when I'm gardening, is what I was going to say.
Sorry. Two more questions? Okay. So there was a young man there. I think he's over 23.
Thank you. Good afternoon. So I'm curious to know the panelists' response to livestock, fruit and vegetables and, you know, nuts and things. What's our situation with livestock? Is that way down the road? Is this step one to getting into killing chickens and rabbits and things? What's the livestock situation?
Well, Laura's over there, the Silver Lake Chicken Queen.
Oh, here we go.
You'll let her answer it.
This is the expert will
speak.
I'll
talk a little bit about livestock. And it also ties into my question. I do think that is kind of where we may go. If we want to really be connected to our food, then if you're going to eat that, you need to be okay knowing about that. And I really think people need to have more of a connection to their meat. So we have chickens at North Hollywood High School, where I volunteer. And we built a chicken coop, and it's wonderful. And the kids got to learn how to use drills and hammers and tools that they don't, they, some of these kids have never held a hammer before, and we got to teach them real skills. Now we have eggs. I gleaned some wild nettles and amaranth and lamb's quarters. I bought a hot plate out of my own pocket, brought in dishes, salt, oil. I made breakfast for the kids, and then I was told that I'm not allowed to feed the students. So I've been working at this high school for 2 years, and I want to feed my kids. And they don't really get the connection between what they do and why they do it. They think I'm a crazy lady that makes them move mulch around for no reason. So other than a few oranges that they eat now and then, they don't really get that connection. Getting to see them eat a good, hearty breakfast, kids who eat candy for breakfast, was so satisfying. It was like, I wanted to cry. So I want to feed my kids. So policy-wise, why is that, and how can I feed the students?
No, if I might, you, I think you know the answer to the chicken roll. I'll tell them the answer to the chicken roll. Oh. Okay, does anybody know the answer to the chicken roll?
Chicken gate.
Tell us.
No, I... Yeah, what's the rule about keeping a chicken at my house?
Okay, so in the city of Los Angeles, you can have hens, not roosters, within 25 feet from an inhabited structure, so that doesn't include garages, sheds, etc. Roosters, I believe the clearance is 100 feet, but the truth about it is it's really based on how much your neighbors complain. So, you know, East LA, South LA, actually in historic Filipino town, very close to us, I see someone with a rooster who has no yard at all and neighbors right all around them. It's really a tolerance thing, and it's a cultural thing. So it really depends on your neighbors. And there's a lot of communities that love the sound of roosters. You cannot have livestock slaughtering. There was a great article in the LA Times last year about people slaughtering their animals and the city health department shutting them down. But... yes, so you can have chickens. Okay. Unincorporated areas of LA County, you can have as many animals as you want, it seems. That's my understanding. And then other smaller cities have their own policies and own rules. So you'd have to look up
so
if you don't live in the
city. You have to stay tuned for goats and cheese and other things.
Next year.
Next year, we will come back.
We also have a pig at North Hollywood High School, but she will never be bacon. She's bacon.
And then one last question. You know, part of the, I just want to explain that the parking structure closes at 9. That's why we're under it.
Closed, but if you want to get validated, you have to be out.
Oh.
Okay. Hi. I work with a group called Hillel, and some of our students at Cal State Northridge are working on a edible landscape program with the college. And I think they just just finished their first year full annual cycle of growing vegetables. So it's great to see them involved in that. But my question is more for people like me who have tried some backyard gardening and tend to kill things off. As often as I succeed in growing, it seems like very often to for someone who doesn't have experience doing gardening or anything else, that first step of getting to a first small success is sometimes a really huge hurdle. Are there programs to help start people off on urban agriculture, growing things in their backyard, in their apartment, in a pot, in a small plot of land, and not just to say, go pick, take a book, but really to kind of hold their hand and get them started through that first year or two of getting over the barriers, getting some initial success, and, you know, probably taking it off from there.
Mm-hmm. Just directly. There's how many master gardeners in the room?
Yes.
There we go. All right, now, I don't want any of you to have to think that you have to sit through 13 weeks of the same propagation workshop to really learn how to kill plants. They launched, just because of the threshold to join in that program, to her credit, both Yvonne Savio and Rachel Searles from the University of California Cooperative Extension, which exists uniquely in LA County as a social justice group that helps low-income people learn how to grow their own food. They widened the scope of students. Their Victory Grower program was amazingly successful. 4 to 6 weeks in, out, get the basics, learn how to kill plants, feel confident about it, and come back and talk about it. Laura brought up a point, and I want everyone to feel a little bit better about kids and what they eat, because it's a slow, steady struggle, and that's one of the patience is the secret to gardening. I just told you that. And with the kids at North Hollywood High School, and Mia's indulged in this bad, horrible habit, is I had a student last year in the summer jobs program, special needs. I didn't know he was Cuban until we talked a little bit about his food and what his family cooked, but he was a big, heavyset kid. And I go, dude, you're working for me. You're picking figs today. And he's like, oh, Mr. Mud, man, figs are nasty. And I'm like, dude, I don't care. They're nasty. It's your nasty job. Now get up there. So he would pick 3 or 4 pounds of figs. And I go, dude, I need 4 buckets. Come on, get to it. And so 4 or 5 buckets later, over to the barbecue, right? I go, dude, now you're grilling figs. He goes, grilled figs, man, that's nasty. I go, dude, yeah. How do you know? Right? And so, you know, I'm taking pictures of him grilling figs, and my foodie friends on Twitter in Milan are like salivating on all this stuff. Mia shows up one day, and Eduardo's there, like, you know, 3 pounds of figs later. Mr. Mudd, these are good. Now, end of the summer, I should have brought this in earlier, and I should not have called it this. But I said, dude, all right, the honey, the grilled figs, it's awesome, right? And Mia, how many pounds of grilled figs did I give you last summer? A few. Yeah. So anyway, I said, dude, we're going to have these with goat cheese. He goes, oh, man, goat cheese, nasty. So steps, evolution, the kids, you killing plants, steps.
So secret maybe to gardening. You have to barbecue the eggs. Ah. Thank you very much, all of you, for coming. And stay tuned. Yeah.
Aloud Audio is produced by the Library Foundation of Los Angeles and made possible through support provided by the Ralph M. Parsons Foundation, the Annenberg Foundation, Righteous Persons Foundation, Errant Fox, City National Bank, Deloitte, K&L Gates, KPMG, Wallace Foundation, the Bujakci Foundation, Dean Hansel, and Donna and Martin J. Wolfe. Media support provided by KPCC, 83.9 FM, KUSC 91.5 FM, and KCET. A loud theme composed by Larry Karish.